Hi, Rhianna Patrick here, and thanks for downloading the latest edition of Can You Dig It Events Guide. Dr. Craig Barker from the University of Sydney joins me to be your tour guide for the latest archaeological news and events here in Australia, but also overseas. So if you're looking to dig a little deeper, it's sure to be a great listen. Enjoy, and don't forget to subscribe to the ABC Re podcast on iTunes.
Can You Dig It? With Dr. Craig Barker.
There's been some big news out of Egypt again this month with the remains of a pyramid built more than sort of 3,500 years ago, discovered south of Cairo.
That's right. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. There's been quite a few big news discoveries announced in Egypt over the last couple of weeks. The pharaonic sculpture from last month and a new tomb revealed earlier this week. But I thought I would look at this story on the remains of a pyramid that was found earlier this month. And you kind of think, well, how on earth could you lose a pyramid? But
found it.
Found it, yes. It's worthwhile bearing in mind, it's not the pointy bit at the top. Pyramids are a bit like icebergs. There's a whole lot underneath as well. So what's happened is that the Antiquities Ministry have actually revealed a corridor and a number of blocks, including one engraved with 10 hieroglyphic lines, found at this royal necropolis just south of Cairo. It's only the ruins, but in very good condition, probably built during the 13th dynasty. And it's very, very interesting because, again, I think most people, and we talked about this when we were looking at the Great Pyramid of Giza, as one of the seven wonders of the world last year. But people tend to think that, you know, the only pyramids are those in the Giza Plateau. But there's actually over 80 up and down the Nile River, and we've now got one more.
Wow. Craig, if we look at what has been happening with Caligula's ship. Now, Caligula had a number of ships, but this is possibly party boat number three?
Yes. Now, I mean, Caligula, of course, is one of the beloved, if that's the right word,
Julian infamous? Emperor,
infamous. Well, I of course, I immediately think of the late, great John Hurt in I, Claudius. Or
oh, love I, Claudius. Course,
yeah, Malcolm McDowell in the movie as well, too. But Caligula, of course, was, verging on psychopathic and a rather sadistic ruler. But one of the things we do know is that he did enjoy pleasure and what you've got is Lake Nemi, situated around about 20 miles just outside of Rome, natural lake, that he had enormous pleasure boats built for cruising. And we're aware from literary sources that there were at least three of these pleasure barges. The story has sort of taken on a mythology of its own, to the point that in the late 1920s, Benito Mussolini, the dictator of Italy, and again another rather sadistic ruler, actually had Lake Nemi partially drained and had an ancient Roman underground tunnel that was connected to the lake reopened in order to drain the water out. And they found the skeletons of two of the boats during those excavations in the late 1920s, early 1930s. Very, very famous excavations in many ways. And all sorts of objects from those two boats ended up in museums all around the world. As I said before, the rumour was always that there was a third boat. Now, local fishermen have said that there's one area of the lake where their nets are constantly being caught up. And so beginning this week, specialist marine divers from the Civil Protection Agency in Italy are actually going to engage in some underwater archaeology, seeing if they can pick up any evidence of that third boat. So we'll see. And if they do find anything, we'll follow up on that story in future.
I like that Caligula had more than one party boat.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you're the emperor, what's the point in having one when you can have three?
That's true. It's all about excess, isn't it?
It is. I wonder whether it's like those Hollywood parties where you have an A-list, a B-list and a C-list, and you think, great, I've been invited to the emperor's party.
And you're on, like, boat on number five.
the one still moored.
Yeah, that would be even worse. You don't even get to leave. Well, to something a little closer to home, Craig, and there's been an interesting dig happening in Adelaide.
Yes, that's right. In the Adelaide CBD at Weymouth Street, an 20-odd day archaeological excavation, which has just been completed this month, at the site of the so-called New Queen's Theatre, which was a theatre constructed in the late 1840s. And it's interesting, it's built right next door to the original Queen's Theatre, which still stands, and it was built in the early 1840s. So this secondary building, not so much was known about it until the excavations took place. One of the interesting things that they've uncovered in this early stage of the assessment of the finds is that the second theatre was extended a number of times, of which there was no previously known record. So it's undergone, the building itself's undergone a number of renovations. But basically, you've got material culture from the very beginning of colonisation of South Australia, right through to the 1920s, and then up until the 1980s when the site becomes a car park. Again, we've joked about this in the past, but all great archaeological sites are underneath a car park. This is Adelaide's contribution. And some really interesting finds that have come out, including a 25-metre deep well. Wells are fantastic archaeologically because this is where people tend to dump things and throw things away. So, all sorts of great things coming out of that. But the excavations, the team that's been working at the site, have unearthed artefacts covering more than 150 years of Adelaide's history, including thousands of tobacco pipes, champagne bottles, we're at the theatre after all, ceramics and a beautiful imported water bottle as well. So some really, really interesting material culture coming out of Adelaide.
And we leave Adelaide now to head back towards Italy, and there's been the oldest dental filling ever found. What makes this dental filling so interesting, apart from being the oldest?
Well, are you one of those people that hates going to the dentist, or do you not mind it?
My dentist and I have an agreement. I actually got banned from a dentist as a kid for yelling help too much, and they said that it was off-putting to the people in the reception. So the dentist I've had since I was about 10. We've got an agreement. He knows what I'm willing to let happen.
And what you can't do.
Yep, and what I need to have a little conversation, and he'll need to maybe draw a diagram. I actually like my dentist. But I know my dad's situation. He is not a dentist lover at all.
Well, I mean, I guess it's one of the great advantages of living in the 21st century as opposed to the Upper Paleolithic period. The advancement in dental hygiene and in dental care has progressed considerably, because what's been uncovered a number of years ago but studied most recently earlier this year, a pair of upper central incisors from a 13,000-year-old skeleton. A person. We don't know much about the person that the teeth were attached to, but based upon the wear and tear, it does appear to be that someone is relatively aged, which again is rather interesting because we tend to think of life expectancy being really quite short in that period of time. Found near Lucia in northern Italy, in each of the teeth, there is a large hole drilled into the surface of the incisor that extends down into the pulp chamber deep inside the tooth. So it's the earliest clear evidence of dental surgery. But what's even more interesting in many ways is that undergoing microscopic analysis, it now seems that the teeth have traces of bitumen with plant fibres and hair embedded into it. And the assumption is that these are actually evidence of prehistoric fillings.
Whoa, bitumen.
Yeah. Bitumen, so not what you'd necessarily want in your teeth today, but
long-lasting.
Well, I mean, the assumption is that the bitumen, along with many medicinal plants, was probably actually being used as an antiseptic, in a similar way that something like beeswax was used in more recent examples of prehistoric dentistry. It's as to how effective it is, I'm perhaps not the right person to comment, but it's rather interesting anyway that you've got clear evidence of very sophisticated surgery at such a very early period in human history, and again using all sorts of interesting techniques to actually fill the hole.
Would you go there? Would you be one of those people who'd be willing to put their body on the line and say, sure, I'll see how this bitumen works out?
No, there is a rather interesting branch of archaeology called experimental archaeology, where people will test out, how to make Greek vases and, napping of stone tools and things like that. Indeed, there was a famous Egyptologist, and I have no idea how he managed to convince his doctor, or more importantly, his insurance company to do it. But he had to have surgery and actually convince his doctor to use an obsidian knife, just like the ancient Egyptians would have done, instead of a scalpel. And he's still alive today, so it was successful. But no, frankly, I'm happy to visit a contemporary dentist, but not using bitumen, please.
Craig, National Archaeology Week is just around the corner.
That's right, the third week of May, and it is the week of celebrating all things associated with archaeology in Australia.
It's celebrating you, Craig.
It is, well, amongst other things. But my colleagues in various universities and museums and consultancy firms, as well as freelance archaeologists right across the country. So a good chance to actually allow members of the public an understanding of how we engage with both Indigenous archaeology in this country and what's called historical archaeology, archaeology of the historical or colonial period, and also a chance to also discuss some of the projects that are run by Australians overseas, including my one in Cyprus. So a really, really interesting opportunity for the general public just to get a sense of what's happening in contemporary archaeological practices in this country.
So, Craig, we might as well start in your state, New South Wales. What are some of the events that you've had a look at that you thought these are actually interesting for a few people and some interesting people talking at some of the New South Wales events?
Most of them based around Sydney, but kick off with the one that I'm involved in, but on Thursday the 18th of May, Sydney University is holding a seminar called At Home, At Work, in Public, and it's a panel discussion in which a whole lot of archaeologists, including myself and various colleagues of mine from the campus, are talking about domestic archaeology, so I'll be speaking about my work the work of my team in Cyprus, but really that idea of how material culture can reflect domestic life in various points in human history. Also at the University of Sydney on the 24th of May, a very good friend of mine and colleague of mine, Kerry Grant, is giving giving a public lecture on forensic archaeology. Kerry has had a quite remarkable career, but one of the things that she did for a number of years was that she actually worked in Iraq following the 2003 invasion. She worked for the US State Justice Department, and following the capture of Saddam Hussein, she was involved in the recovery of human remains for some of the trials that were held against various members of Saddam Hussein's government. So that real sense of how archaeology can have a massive, massive role in international justice and the defence of human rights. So it'll be, and also, again, you know, the fact that you're dealing not necessarily with excavating human remains from thousands of years ago, but also, you know, contemporary human remains as well. So what type of toll that takes on the modern practitioner as well. So that should be a really, really interesting talk. And then the other thing that's happening in New South Wales that's perhaps of note is out at Parramatta, at the old Parramatta North in Western Sydney, the old Cumberland Hospital site. This is an area which has been undergoing considerable redevelopment by the government. I think we might have even talked about it a couple of weeks ago as one of the news stories, but some really interesting artefacts that have come out of the excavations and general research that's taking place in that area. So they're going to be holding an open day, and it's a good opportunity for people to come and understand the consultation and process of commercial archaeology, also to investigate that first contact between Indigenous Australians and white Australians and how that's reflected within material culture as well. So that should be a really interesting day.
Craig, Queensland has got so much happening, and I'm glad that I'm just nearby because the Queensland Museum has got a series of Meet the Curator talks on each lunchtime during that week, from ancient Roman lamps to historical maps to getting a sense of how people saw the landscape. So much happening there, and also some stuff relating to Queensland's story as well. But yeah. The Museum of Tropical Queensland, Maddie Fowler is giving a talk.
That's right, yes. So she's the new senior curator of maritime archaeology in the Museum of Tropical Queensland. And she's talking about And her talk is on the 17th of May. She's talking about two shipwrecks, and in particular, the Chinese immigrant steamship called the Mecca, which was wrecked in the Torres Strait in 1878. And on board, they've found a collection of Chinese cash coins. And one of the other shipwreck sites from that area as well, too, was a Queensland labour trade schooner called the Foam, which went down in 1893. It ran aground on the outer Great Barrier Reef. And what's fascinating about the second ship, the Foam, was that it had a series of ceramic armbands that were manufactured in Europe, but were copies of traditional shell armbands treasured by Pacific Islanders for body decoration and used in exchanges. So again, a really, really interesting insight into the colonial, not just movement of people and immigrations of people, both forced and unforced, but also the way that Europeans are actually trying to break into that labour market and finding things that have meaning for those societies and those cultures and copying them.
This is ABC Radio. I'm Rhianna Patrick, and Can You Dig It with Dr. Craig Barker is having a look at the events that are happening across the nation as part of National Archaeology Week, which kicks off next month. And Craig, South Australia has got two open days at Marble Hill, which was the summer residence for the Governor of South Australia from 1880 until it burnt down in 1955. And there's going to be a whole host of talks throughout the day, artefact displays, local history, books for sale, tours, as well as a bit of afternoon tea. But the 17th of May, there's a bit of rock art from the Kimberley lecture happening, if you're into rock art.
Yes, Peter Veef is giving a lecture about Kimberley region rock art. Peter, some people may remember, was one of the talking heads on the first Footprints TV series from a number of years ago, that fantastic documentary. But he's been involved in a five-year study called Kimberley Visions, which is mapping the rock art and the occupational history of the northern area of the Kimberleys. And the talk will examine shared arts styles from across northern Australia. And we'll look at the question of regionality and identity within rock art and what's identifiable. So that sounds really, really interesting.
And Tasmania's got an excavation which is going on at the moment, which is a nice one to check out, Craig. And what's the story with this excavation?
Yeah, so this is the site of Tribunna, which we talked about last month. A number of students from ANU and from the University of Sydney have recently finished a fieldwork season there. So it's become a training dig for the next generation of Australian archaeologists. But it's a site of a hotel, probably from the 1830s, and a military barracks from 1844. And one of the interesting things is that relationship, not just in terms of, you know, English soldiers serving on the other side of the the other side of the globe, serving the empire, but their family, how their wives and how their children engaged within that setting as well. So Sam Dix is going to be giving a talk on site about what's been uncovered in the most recent series of excavations. It's a beautiful part of Tasmania where they're working too. Absolutely gorgeous countryside. So now two seasons in and another two seasons planned. So it's kind of a nice assessment in terms of the work that's been done so far and what they hope to do in future.
And Victoria, if you have always been interested in finding out a little bit more about archaeology, the La Trobe Experimental Archaeology Group has got a full-day workshop as part of National Archaeology Week.
Yes. Now, this is a long tradition in National Archaeology Week, actually, of the workshop where there's stone napping and various cooking experiments to actually try and replicate and understand ancient ways of lives. They're putting on a barbecue lunch, but I must stress that they actually haven't specified yet whether it's traditional cooking or whether it's more modern and traditional, a more modern barbecue or not. But either way, it's kind of fun because there will be food as well as education.
And we do have some, there's a bit happening in Western Australia as well, Craig. We haven't forgotten about the West Australians.
No, just very quickly, because I'm conscious we're going to run out of time, but Richard Offen, who's the Executive Director of Heritage Perth, is giving a lunchtime talk at the City Library on the 25th of May, and he'll be talking about the role of archaeology in the conservation of heritage structures, and in particular, building archaeology, and very much the way that modern architecture can fit within that heritage framework. And there's also a special archaeology seminar on the 25th of May, same day, at the University of Western Australia, And this one is based on a long-term academic research project run out of UWA, focused on Lizard Island, which is a continental island on the Great Barrier Reef. It's traditionally owned by the Dingal people. I think that's the correct pronunciation. Great example of Australian archaeological research relating to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and how over the last few decades it's become much more broad and rather than just sort of us Anglo scientists coming in and saying this, this and this, actually engaging with community and working very, very closely with the people whose archaeology we're exploring. So this is a really, really interesting process, and the island itself has a very long and complex history of trade and exchange, being so close to the Coral Sea, and so yeah, all sorts of really, really interesting things should be revealed in that talk if anyone's in Perth.
Well, Craig, if you do, you know, if this is something that you're sitting at home and you're thinking, I'd like to do something for National Archaeology Week, the website to check out to see what is happening in your area, and there might be local things as well.
That's right, yes.
Just take a look at archaeologyweek.com, and I'll also post a link over at facebook.com/abcre if you are looking for any more information.